It's a good time for a Coeur d'Alene Symphony concert. The snow is moving away and it's easier to get around. So for all of us in the greater region to be able to go to this concert, even though, ironically, it's essentially sold out or nearly so. Is that true, Jan Palant?
Good morning, Vern. That's correct. We are nearly sold out for both concerts.
And so that is tonight at 7:30 and then tomorrow afternoon at 2 at the Kroc Center. But let's go ahead and back up to when you folks were conceiving of this concert, because I sense a feeling of inclusion in the four elements of this concert. So let's briefly mention what they are. First, you're beginning with everybody's most beloved story set to music, right?
Exactly. This concert will be very... We'll have a lot of diverse program. Mm. We will start with Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf, with wonderful narrator Steve Shortridge,
whom we'll be speaking to within a minute. Yeah.
Then we will have five pieces by the Melody Contest winners. Those are young, gifted students.
Really young.
Very young.
Like third grade or something like that.
Elementary and high schools. Those are. There would be typically 70, 80, 90 applicants from this area, and five of the young composers would be picked up and eventually orchestrated by their colleagues.
Yeah.
So this will be a big, big day for all the community here to see how the composers feel, let's say, is moving forward. I can tell that the pieces that we will perform tonight and tomorrow are very colorful with a lot of imagination, so I'm very optimistic about our community.
And then a soloist.
And then we have a violin soloist, a fabulous violin soloist, Sophie Lee, the winner of the junior division of the Menuhin competition in London. She will be playing both violin romances by Beethoven, and this is a big anniversary of Beethoven. 250 years from his death.
And then,
intermission, pictures at an exhibition by Modest Petrovich Mussorgsky, a big, huge work, enormous sound, many musicians, many artists involved on the stage. So it should bring a good energy.
Great concert happening tonight at 7:30, tomorrow at 2. Stephen Shortridge is the narrator for this. And good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Bert.
And so how did they find you when looking around the Coeur d'Alene community to find the perfect person to represent Peter and the Wolf?
I don't know who else is in the town that acts, but I know Ellen Travolta, and I took... didn't take John Travolta's place, but on Welcome Back, Cotter back in 78 or 9, I guess. He was leaving the show, and I came on as a new sweat hog. So I kind of had met her in those periods of time, and then we ended up being both in Coeur d'Alene. And
isn't that fun?
Yeah. It is. But I left acting in about 89. I did Bold and Beautiful as part of the original cast, and then... when that was done, my real passion wasn't acting, actually. It was art. And so I've been an artist professionally since then.
And so has the primary part of your art world been since you moved to Coeur d'Alene?
Me personally, yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably the 10,000-hour rule works to learn something. But I finally got it, and I've been... in different places around the world, and on cruise lines and things.
Yeah, but as to the art, then has Coeur d'Alene become has it become a good place for your art and to find
a lot of people that know the arts probably remember the Painter's Chair. And that was down in the corner of 3rd and Sherman, and sold that about 3 years ago. My wife passed on almost 3 years ago, and so I kind of liquidated everything, and I'm kind of thinking about regrouping. I'm going to get married shortly, and so I. Maybe kick it back up.
Nice. Yeah. And then back to your acting life and using your voice and narrating. You've probably heard narrations over the over the years. You probably heard Peter and the Wolf as a kid.
I was familiar with the music, but I really wasn't familiar with the story. Yeah. And then I realized later that the music is so familiar, but a lot of people don't. I mean, I didn't catch on to the story until. Yeah. I was involved.
Yeah, well, and now you are involved, so you're doing that famous narration to Peter and the Wolf, and you want to give us kind of a sample of how you're going to open it?
Well, in my normal speech, I'm a little mumbler, Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do a little bit of Peterman from Seinfeld. So anyway, shall I tell you a story? Once upon a time, well, this is a musical story. And like all stories, it has characters. But here, each is represented by a different instrument of the orchestra. So that you can recognize the characters every time they appear, I'm going to ask the various instruments to show them to you. For instance, the bird will be played by the flute. And then it goes through all the instruments. It's really neat. Mm-hmm. I have a 4 and 5 year old granddaughters that'll be there on Saturday. And I think, you know, I don't know whether their attention will work, but I think it's kind of fun to include young people into this, the experience of symphony.
That grandkid is going to pay attention because it's her grandpa.
Pops.
With any luck.
I might even hear that.
Yeah, you might. but that's really lovely because what you already did, you're not simply giving us the words off the page, but you're giving the thoughts and feelings off the page, mm-hmm. which is, I guess, what you, an actor, is going to do, right?
Right.
And you felt some liberty to take a little time, not change the words because they need them for the cues, but just to take a little time. And
well, I've noticed I have a script that's older, and people have, you know, penciled in different versions in a way, probably even improvements in a way. And I took an entry, the intro is actually from a Peter Ustinov version, who I like the very best, and probably David Bowie my least. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to look at the different ways that people actually do that. It was very fun.
What about doing voices when you have different character within a narration, mm-hmm. when you have characters to represent? How far do you try to go on that?
I try to go pretty far. I'm kind of doing Julia Child for the bird, kind of almost Eeyore for the cat. And then I realized, you know, oh, bother, you know, Pooh. But I haven't done Pooh, but I realize that it's easier to actually imagine some things. Like I said, I put a little Peterman on it because then he enunciates, and I don't. Mm-hmm. The way I speak, I do not enunciate. So it's been helpful for me to actually include a little edge on that. And I've never really narrated. I actually accepted this thinking, well, this will be a fun challenge for me.
So. And you're having a good time with it, I get.
Very much.
Yeah. This is Stephen Shortridge, who is the narrator for Peter and the Wolf. And then back to Jan. Have you done in your career so far other Peter and the Wolf productions, or is this your first time to actually do it with narrator?
Actually, it is the first time. Yes, it is the very first time, and I'm very happy for it. Of course, I have been looking at the score many, many times before, attending concerts, live concerts before, but myself conducting this piece with such a wonderful narrator. It's first time. Basically.
And Prokofiev didn't. There's so many aspects of narrated pieces, how they can or won't fit together. This is really skillfully put together that way, isn't it, with making it work in terms of the narration and the music?
Exactly. It's a very well-planned structure of this piece. And what I think is very important here is to really make sure that the timing of the music and the narrator itself is really coming on the right time. It's not only that the orchestra would be sounding beautifully and with a lot of enjoyment, but it's very important to have this connection with narrator and orchestra, and it's happening, and we can't wait for the concert.
Nice. So that's the opening of tonight and tomorrow afternoon's concert, Peter and the Wolf, with this wonderful narration. So, Stephen, thank you, and thank you for kind of being in our area, because is there kind of a vibe somewhere in California that that all the good actors should go find Coeur d'Alene? Because of course you and Ellen, and then prior to that, Patty Duke and the other people.
Jack Bannon.
And Jack Bannon and another one that goes to I can't remember his name, that goes to Priest Lake and hangs out there, and so.
Oh, that character actor
that's done some commercials and things like that. But anyway, so that's a good place for actors to hang out. Are you ever persuaded to maybe get it back on stage for anything, you know, if your arm's twisted hard enough?
Long time ago, the local Lake City Playhouse, I did On Golden Pond as a director. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes think I would have been a much better director. I was mm-hmm. always pretty anxious as an actor, mm-hmm. to be honest. So I think that would have been more fun. It's a lot of work. And mm-hmm. So you really have, it's a real passionate thing to watch. It's fun to watch the orchestra and know this is their passion and to watch them. And they work so hard. And I show up and get to leave. Mm-hmm. But I'm watching him mm-hmm. conduct and work and get the sound that he mm-hmm. wants. And I see him communicate that to them. It's really fascinating. Mm-hmm. I've really never been in a rehearsal, I guess. I've always seen people finish products.
The results, yeah.
Like people when I've been an oil painter now for decades, and people look at finished oil paintings and think, oh, wow, that's something. They have no idea the struggle that went into getting to that, mm-hmm. Whether it was the past work, and this one's an easy painting, but all these things add up. And it's really fascinating to watch the orchestra actually work. And I hadn't really gotten to see that until four nights ago.
Nice. Well, that's a great thing which you can communicate to many people from now on. So mm-hmm. that's good. So thank you very much, Stephen Shortridge. Now let's go to the violinist, Sophie Lee, Yisheng Sophie Lee, who is about to play for us in the other room. And so we'll ask her to move to her violin. And we'll find out a lot about her. She's no stranger to these parts. She's been here before. And so she's, as her calling card, she's in our studio, has her violin in her hand, and has for us that wonderful adagio, that first movement of the first Bach suite for unaccompanied violin. So let's go to the studio and hear from Yisheng Sophie Lee. Thank you. From our studio, we have been enjoying the violin playing of Yisheng Sophie Lee, who was playing the first movement of the first suite for unaccompanied violin by Bach. The real bread and butter, the essential stuff for any violinist. So, good morning, Sophie, and thank you for this very much.
No, thank you for inviting me here.
And how long have you lived with that exact movement? Have you had that in your life for years by now?
I think I've played it since I was about 10, so almost 6 years.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like an old friend.
Yeah.
So do you and your old friend kind of grow up together? Do you change it up? Do you find different things happening as you play it?
Mm-hmm. Especially in Bach, I think that you just kind of grow with the piece. And as I have more adventures in life and get more experience in life, I find myself finding different colors or different kind of nuances I can use in the Bach. So it's really grown with me over time.
Nice. Yeah. And you're a student of Simon James, right?
Mm-hmm.
The legendary teacher of violin in Seattle and now other places too. But with somebody like you, and how long have you been with Simon?
About 7-8 years.
So a long time.
Yeah.
And then you have these very personal Bach pieces, the three sonatas, the three partitas to have in your world, in your life. Does he coach you and teach you through these, or does he let some of these be your music that you simply discover on your own?
Yeah, so what he really thinks is really important for every one of his students is that they're diverse. He doesn't want them all to be the same because mm-hmm. we're all different people.
Mm-hmm.
So he really lets us do, unless it's totally crazy, he says mm-hmm. no. But most generally, he lets us find different colors and experiment by ourselves. And he gives us suggestions and bowings, phrasings, but mostly the interpretation is all up to us, which I think is really beautiful.
Nice. And so how many of those three sonatas and three partitas have you been through? Have you discovered, and how many do you have left waiting for you?
I have about two left, so I've kind of played through all of them, but I would say the last two I'm not as comfortable with as the other ones I've played.
Yeah. But you have a whole lifetime to get to them, don't
yep.
you?
yeah,
because you have so many things to get to, and that is the interesting thing of, if you don't mind me calling it that, your career development,
mm-hmm.
because you first won the, you were how old when you first won the Coeur d'Alene Symphony Competition?
I was, I think, about 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that you've been doing this for a while, and then a year or two later was the Menuhin Competition. And then in those 4 years since the Menuhin Competition, have you gone out and done a lot of things, or have you just kind of hunkered down and studied and grown?
So I think both are very important because I have to keep expanding my career as well as learning repertoire. So I think I've kind of found a balance of both. So I have been doing performances, but not too much to the point that I'm just playing the same repertoire over and over again. So I do have kind of a chunk of time where I take some time off, learn a bunch of new repertoire, because I think that learning a diverse range of repertoire is really, really important in becoming a musician. So I think I've done a little bit of both.
And so probably about a year or two, I'm just going to guess here, that you and Simon were in a lesson, and Simon said, oh, by the way, Beethoven birthday is coming along,
mm-hmm.
so maybe it would be a good time to learn the two romances. Mm-hmm. Is that about what happened sometime in the past?
So actually, I've been playing the F major romance since I was about 9.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's such a popular and beautiful one, yeah.
It's really beautiful. The G major is about 2 years old.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And I was first preparing it for the Menuhin competition, actually, the F major. And I got an invite to play with the Calgary Philharmonic in February later this year. So I started learning the G major a couple years ago. So
yeah. So now you have these two. And mm-hmm. just 2 weeks ago, you played it with Spokane Youth Symphony here in town. And then you're playing it with the Coeur d'Alene Symphony tonight and tomorrow. Then you're doing Calgary
mm-hmm.
here in about a month or so.
Yeah.
Any others lined up for that, as long as this Beethoven year is going on?
I'm no more Beethoven romances after Calgary, but I am playing the Beethoven Concerto.
Oh, you are? You've taken on the Beethoven Concerto.
Yeah. It's the ear of Beethoven.
Well, of course. Yeah. Okay, so this, I presume. So who are you doing the Beethoven Concerto with in May?
I'm playing with the Bremerton Symphony back in my hometown.
Oh, wow. And that's a pretty big deal to tackle the whole Beethoven Concerto.
It's huge.
Wow. So that's kind of fun to think that you've lived with one of the Beethoven romances for a while, and then the other one is recent. So kind of talk about that experience, because you have an old friend and a recent friend in those two romances.
So the F major, since I played it when I was little, I kind of had the fingerings and the bowings that I was learned and taught by with. And so when I brought it back a couple of years ago while I was learning the G major, I found out that I was kind of stuck in that place still. So I had to use a lot more imagination to kind of renew the piece, because I feel like since all these pieces I'm going to be playing all my career, hopefully very long, for a long time. And so it's important to kind of get new ideas every single time I play it, or else it gets, you know, boring. And so that G major is a little bit easier to find my interpretation, because it was a new thing. So I had no idea how this piece went. And so it was totally new. So I could just start coloring it and everything. But the F major, I had to do a little bit work on kind of trying to forget what I did a little bit and find my own new things. But both are so beautiful that I really enjoy playing them.
Nice. So that will be the conclusion of the first half of the Coeur d'Alene Symphony Concert tonight at 7:30 tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Kruk Center. And so you've done a fair number of times in your life that you've played with orchestras. Is that a cool thing to do? Do you like doing that?
Yeah, I really love playing with orchestra, because it's kind of like you're sharing the stage with about 100 other wonderful musicians and plus the conductor. And so it's really nice, because you can, especially when you get a good conductor like Jan, because we share musical ideas, and I can tell what he wants out of the orchestra. And even before I say something, he knows just to tell the orchestra. So it's really nice working with conductors like that, especially with one of my favorite pieces, The Romance. And the Coeur d'Alene Symphony, I've known for over half my life. So it's really nice to share the stage again with people I know and love.
Nice. And are we going to have you probably moving out of the wonderful orbit of Seattle pretty soon? Because Seattle has been awfully good to you, hasn't
it?
It's been the perfect place to be.
Cool. Yeah, I do think about maybe in the future, since it's always not good to be stuck in one place for a long time, since I was born there, raised there, so it's almost been 16 years since I've lived and studied in Seattle. So maybe I am thinking about going to different conservatories in the U.S. to get my bachelor's, but in the future, for sure,
So having had such a strong and enlightened teacher as Simon James, I would think that choosing your next teacher is going to be pretty crucial, isn't it?
Yeah, I think choosing teachers is really, really crucial. It's a really big chunk of your life, and it'll shape the way you start to think about music or develop music. So it is a really big, important choice to make.
We'll look forward to following that, but we especially look forward to your performance tonight and tomorrow. So thank you, Sophie, very much for coming in. Yishang Sophie Lee, who's playing those two Beethoven romances at the conclusion of the first half of the concert. And so back to you, Jan, whom I assume is having a pretty wonderful time engaging in Beethoven with Sophie, right?
Exactly. It's an amazing experience, and I really admire a lot how Sophie is using her unique personality with such a beautiful resonating sound, and it's really a fantastic pleasure to collaborate with. And as Sophie said, we have big anniversary of Beethoven, so I'm glad we can have in Coeur d'Alene all these aspects going on. I know that it's a very rich community, artistically speaking, as well. So it should be really great evening today and tonight.
And then the second half is an old fave in some ways, and maybe such an old favorite that people almost take it for granted, at least outsiders, but insiders don't take pictures at an exhibition for granted, do they?
It's easy to listen, I would say, to this piece. It's maybe more challenging to perform. However, by performing those pieces where you have to really extremely work hard to make really something going on, it might guarantee a great energy, because when we play, when we perform kind of challenging pieces, it requires extremely a lot of attention, focusing on every detail, and it requires sometimes to go beyond ourselves, I would say. And when this happens, I think I always say this is the moment when we can be between the earth and heaven. We don't know what's going on in the concert moment, but we know that there is some energy, some transcendental moments. But coming back to the pictures at the exhibition, I think this piece, generally speaking, is masterfully orchestrated. So one can work with a lot of orchestra colors. To combine them into one mixture. It's very much expanded for every section. The wind section have a lot of solos, a lot of principles from each section have kind of showcase moments. The strings, I don't want to say they are accompanying, but they are having a role of supporting the color, which is extremely important in this piece. And I would say, it's good that Maurice Ravel did orchestrate this piece in 1922. I can hear Maurice Ravel's kind of influences. He did work a lot with the music colors, and I especially admire him that he was able to think in Mussorgsky's mind. He exactly knew where Mussorgsky was going, what he wanted to tell to the audience. I think what's important in this composition, generally speaking, is to kind of make your own stories. Even before we come to the concerts, we could little bit read about each movement that is demonstrating pictures. This was Hartmann, a famous architect of the 20th century, who was traveling a lot, Poland, Ukraine, Russia, Italy, France, and by all his visits, he was portraying some pictures that Mussorgsky was trying to put into the music. And we don't have so many compositions nowadays that would work with the pictures, with the paintings, so I think it should be unique nice. Experience.
Yeah. Pictures and exhibition to conclude this concert. So thank you to the three of you, certainly, Jan Palant, for this deep sense of pictures and exhibition, and certainly to you, Stephen, for what you're going to be bringing to this. So that's nice, and always great to have you back, Sophie. So thank you.